What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Utah just might be building the prototype for internment camps for the unhoused. Part of Trump's plan to rid the streets of the consequences of capitalism. Coming back to the show is Jesse Rabinowitz, campaign and communications director at the National Homelessness Law Center. He led the communications and power building work in the historic Johnson v. Grants Pass Supreme Court case. Jesse directs the Housing Not Handcuffs campaign, a nationwide movement to protect the rights of people who live outside and secure housing for all. Good morning and welcome back.
Good morning. It's good to see you again.
You too. Well, as you know, you piqued my interest when we were talking about this internment camp and then this Cicero Institute, which prior to our conversation, I had never heard of before. I've done a little bit of digging. So I'm going to say a couple of things, then I'm going to ask you to talk about them. So I went on their website. The chairman of the board is someone y'all named Joe Lonsdale. He's an American entrepreneur. This is his bio. He's an American entrepreneur and technology investor. Wait for it. He founded Palantir, Adepar, OpenGov, and other companies, and is a partner at 8VC, his venture capital firm. Along with friends and colleagues, he is building the Cicero Institute to help policymakers and entrepreneurs work together on society's challenges. Some of his recent posts include things like take out the regulatory trash, stop funding the woke and stupid, remove North Carolina state health plan blindfolds. Housing First foments homelessness in California. So that's just him. And then there's six people on the board of director, five white men, one white woman, all of them except for one fairly young, actually not the poster children for who we normally think of when we think of who's sitting in cigar smoked room developing, you know, the policies of evil. These are young people. And we're seeing that consistently, that the demographic of the American conservative is changing. You talked to me about the Cicero Institute. When did they first come on your radar? What is their relationship with Trump? How much influence do they have in the White House?
The Law Center's been tracking the Cicero Institute for many years. They are responsible for a number of laws that have been passed in states across the country that make it a crime to be homeless. They're employing a cookie cutter approach to legislation. So they shop around similar legislation in different states. For example, their cookie cutter bills often make it a crime to sleep outside, direct funding away from proven solutions to homelessness like housing and towards things that we don't do anymore because they don't work, like forced treatment or requiring people to jump through tons of hoops. Their bills increase the policing of folks experiencing homelessness and make it easier to force folks into government-run detention camps. I like to shout out Kentucky as an example of what their bills look like. So Kentucky added a fifth pillar to their anti-homeless bill that said if there's a homeless person on your private property, you can invoke stand your ground to use force and even deadly force to remove them. That's who we're dealing with. These people have made it legal to kill homeless people. And in Kentucky, we know that there was a woman who was given a ticket for sleeping outside due to the Cicero criminalization bill. She was in active labor. The police officer did not believe her. She thought, the police officer thought this woman was lying. And when this woman was in an hour of her need, she was having a medical emergency, she was having a kid, the officer gave her a citation. Later, she gave birth to a healthy kid, a healthy boy later that day. But this shows that people who pass these laws, despite what they might say, do not care about compassion or empathy or helping people. All their laws do is make it illegal to sleep outside and easier to force people into government-run detention camps. Now, over the past several months and over the past year, we have seen the Cicero Institute play an outsized role in shaping homeless policy at the White House. Joe Lonsdale, the billionaire founder of the Cicero Institute, is friends with people like J.D. Vance, Peter Thiel, Elon Musk. So these far-right billionaires have coalesced around the White House and are now shaping homeless policy. We see the Cicero Institute's fingerprints all over last year's Johnson versus Grants Pass decision, which led to the increased criminalization of folks who sleep outside. We see the Cicero fingerprint all over Trump's anti-homeless executive order, and we see their fingerprints all over funding changes that HUD is making right now that are going to force over 170,000 people, mostly people with disabilities and senior citizens, back on the streets. These folks do not want to solve homelessness. They want to make it worse.
Let's talk about this facility in Utah. What are the, it's not built yet, right? This is in process.
That's correct.
Okay. What are the details that have emerged so far? Like how many acres, how many bed, like what, because there's a proposal on the table that's moving through some sort of governmental something, yes?
That's correct. So there is a proposal. And just to back up a little bit, so several months ago, Donald Trump introduced or authored an executive decree about that will make it easier for cities and states to criminalize people for people to ar be arrested for sleeping outside. Now, the governor of Utah was so inspired by this bill, he essentially wrote his own for Utah saying, "We agree, we're going to do the same thing here." And the Cicero Institute has been all over this lobbying for this government-run detention camp. And it's only possible because Utah already has one of Cicero's cookie-cutter anti-homeless bills on the books. So in Utah, they are talking about and moving towards the creation of a 16-acre massive government-run homeless detention camp that will have about 1,300 beds. This includes 800 beds for forced treatment. They talk about things like forcing people to do free labor for the camp in order to earn the privilege of sleeping inside. You know, at no time in human history has forcing people into a camp ever been a good thing, right? My people were forced into camps in Europe and they died, right? They were killed by the government. That is exactly what we should be thinking about here, and we should learn our lessons from history that forcing people into camps is never okay. Yet that is the direction that Utah is headed in unless we stop it.
I'll lift up that here in this country, Japanese people were forced into internment camps. It has been repeatedly used as a weapon of oppression, a weapon of war, a rep weapon of social control, and it is always violent. What is a work requirement, and how does that play out exactly?
We don't know. We don't know. There is this incorrect belief that, you know, just to take us on a little sidetrack, I just read this amazing book called Madness, which looks at a Jim Crow asylum in Maryland, and how people were treated there. It's a book by Antonia Hilton. And the folks who built the psych hospital in Maryland, I believe in the 1800s, but I'm not totally sure on the timing. The first folks who were forced to live there had to build the buildings they lived in because they believed that work would help them heal. And we are doing the exact same thing in Utah. Look, people experiencing homelessness want to work. They want to have a job that pays wages that are good, that has dignity. But the truth is, there's no work. And there's certainly no work that pays a wage where you can afford a place to live. So if they're gonna, it, like, people want to work. People do not need to be forced into providing free labor, right? Like, that is called slavery. And this idea that we need to force people to work is just as incorrect as this idea that we need to force people to want housing. People want housing. People want jobs. There are no good paying jobs in this country anymore because the Trump administration has decimated labor, and there's nowhere that people can live without paying too much than they can afford in rent. So instead of wasting millions of dollars, this camp is going to cost upwards of $75 million. We should just get people a place to live. It's cheaper, it's moral, and we know that it works.
Who's funding that $75 million? Where are they proposing that that money comes from?
Right now, our understanding is that a large portion of it will be absorbed by the state of Utah, with some infusions coming in from the federal government. But this means, my understanding is that all of the mental health funding in Utah will go towards the creation of this camp. We're also hearing that opioid settlement dollars might go towards the creation of this camp. So it seems like Utah is diverting all of their resources that should be used to help people into the creation of a government-run homeless detention camp. Now, we need more mental health services. We need more treatment services. Those things do not happen under duress. They do not happen under force. They certainly do not happen in remote government-run detention camps on locked wards. But again, we see the government can find money to pay for things that it wants to pay for. We need to build a political will so that they pay for things that actually help people, like housing and good health care.
I'm just sitting. I'm sit. What I'm sitting with is all of the mental health dollars going to this place. First of all, the part of the egregiousness there is making the assumptive link between being unhoused and mental health crisis, right? Not everybody on that is unhoused is dealing with mental health crisis, right? Unless you count the insanity in all of us that capitalism creates. Not everybody that is unhoused is utilizing substances, right? And if they are, they're doing it to cope. So, maybe housing would help with that as well. There's something that we say, those of us that care about this work or advocate, and it's a really simple statement, but I want you to brass tacks break it down, right? When people say, what is the solution to homelessness? The answer is house people. Talk about why. That's the solution.
The solution to homelessness is housing and services. I worked doing homeless street outreach in DC with folks who were very mentally ill. None of them wanted to be outside. None of them chose to experience homelessness. They couldn't afford rent. But I saw people move into housing first, get stable, and from there, find the treatment and care they wanted, reconnect with family, find employment, get a doctor. I'm thinking of one client particularly who I saw in passing, and he recognized me, but I had no idea who this guy was because I hadn't seen him since he moved into housing. And he was so healthy. He had put on weight, he looked fit, and he had this glow about him. His life was transformed because he got housing. I'm thinking of another friend of mine, Walden, who has since passed away, but Walden lived outside for an incredibly long time during the days of housing last. He was required to be sober, to jump through hoops, to go to a psychiatrist. Those things just were too burdensome for him. So he kept cycling between homelessness, housing, hospital, jail. Not because he wanted to, but because it just couldn't make it work. It didn't work for him. When DC adopted the housing first approach, Walden got housed in 3 days. From there, he didn't overcome, but he had COPD, but he got healthy enough that he ran over a dozen marathons. He got his HIV viral load undetectable. He got treatment for his mental health issues, and he devoted his life to helping connect people living outside with services and advocating for people who need the support that he got. We see proof every single day that housing plus services works. But the truth is, there's not enough of it to go around. If you were on a lifeboat, and there were 10 people on your lifeboat, and there were five life preservers, five people lived, five people didn't, you wouldn't say life preservers don't work. You would say there's not enough of them. But people like the Cicero Institute and now the Trump administration are throwing the whole proven solution of housing first out, and they want to take us backwards. They want to take us backwards to a time where there were more people sleeping outside, where it was even more illegal to sleep outside, and where the punishment for sleeping outside was either being forced into jail or a government-run detention camp. We used to do that as a country. We stopped doing it because it was cruel and because it didn't work. We need political leaders to actually focus on what works. And in DC and in Utah and across the country, it's housing with support. It's reminiscent of me to the people who say that climate change isn't real or that cigarettes don't cause cancer. We know they're wrong, right? And the only people who have a vested interest in trying to debunk proven fact are people who have a political agenda. I'm focused on solving homelessness and getting folks into the housing and support they need. We know what works. It is settled science. No serious person in this industry thinks otherwise. But we have to think about the people who stand to profit and who stand to gain from the creation of these government-run homeless detention camps.
I did it with my last guest. I'm going to do it with you. And I've been doing it really since the beginning of the second term of this regime, which is the crystal ball game. Right? That we all, you might have heard this in the waiting room when I was having this conversation, that when the headlines came, right, January, when the proclamations were rolling out, when we all felt like we were getting sucker punched repeatedly, people were in the streets and they were reacting to the headlines. And I was like, yeah, we should be reacting to the headlines, but we should be thinking about what this means in 3 months, in 6 months, in 9 months. I'll give you an example. I think we talked about this actually last time we were here, but one of the cuts that's been made, right, is to places that do reproductive services. Well, you're not just cutting abortion, you're cutting STD screening, you're cutting HIV/AIDS treatment, you're cutting access to PEP, you're right, like PrEP, you're like all of this stuff, that's what you're cutting. So just if we're talking about the HIV/AIDS epidemic and all of the things that have been funded to mitigate that. And if there's no more money for that, then let's go 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, say in the Black community where the virus hasn't been mitigated. Do that for the gun house crisis. 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months of this policy. What are we looking at on the streets of America?
We're looking at a ton more people sleeping outside, right? We have already seen massive cuts to healthcare. Healthcare debt is a leading cause of homelessness. We have seen massive cuts to food assistance. And so now people are going to be even more constrained in how they're going to stretch their dollar. Is it going to go towards food? Is it going to go towards medicine? It should go towards housing. And in the richest country in the world, that's just shameful. We also know inflation is up. Things are more expensive. Thanks to Trump, housing is more expensive. So we see all of these pressures that are both going to push more people into homelessness. And at the same time, we see a retreat from proven solutions to homelessness. So not only are there going to be more people outside, people are going to stay outside longer. And instead of funding and promoting policies that work, the government is going to say, it's illegal to sleep outside. Your choice is either jail or a Utah-like government-run homeless detention camp. But I'm an organizer because I believe in hope and I believe that we can come together and do things. It doesn't have to be like this, right? We can join together and fight them and build a country where nobody has to choose between eggs and their medicine and their rent, because we have enough money, we have enough ingenuity, and we have enough people power to beat them. We just have to come together and organize and make it real clear that this isn't just about the people who are sleeping outside tonight. This is about most people in this country who are way closer to sleeping outside than they are to being a billionaire like Elon Musk. And we have more in common together than we do with people like Donald Trump, Cicero founder Joe Lonsdale, and his billionaire buds like Elon Musk and Peter Thiel.
Rabinowitz, excuse me, I gotta leave it there. I just clocked him over time. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll have you back.
Good to see you. Have a good one.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.